past week in class, for the first time I can ever remember, I was absolutely flummoxed by the exchanges with some of the students. We just watched a film, The Magdalene Sisters. I hope you know that. That is this horrific depiction of life in a convent for that was set up by for an order that is supposed to treat wayward girls. It is a terrifying picture. And as we know from the reports of the Diocese of Cloyne and Dublin and the Prime Minister of Ireland's own statement, this was not unusual. They talked about systemic violence by the church in Ireland. Okay, what was the problem? So I suggested that no one could love unless they had first been loved, which seems to me as a parent and as an adult, too, for that matter, just self-evident. And it was contested. It was absolutely denied by several of the brightest and the most sensitive kids in the class. And I confess I was dumbstruck. The example that one kid brought up was, well, what about those soldiers who throw themselves on a grenade to help, you know, to save their buddies? And a young woman very vigorously said, well, if a bus were coming and it was going to run over my kid, then I'd throw myself under the bus rather than have my kid. Well, it's only after class that I thought of asking further questions, which might have helped. What if this grenade were thrown among the midst of your enemies? Or what if the baby that was about to be run over by the bus was the child of your worst enemy? Would you do this? I was surprised, frankly, at what I believe is their naivete. Because it seems to me self-evident from my own experiences growing up, my own experience with my own sons, that you can't love unless you've first been loved. And that, of course, is what illumines this passage from Matthew. Because, as Teresa of Avila, one of the two female doctors of the church, teachers of the church, put it, in the end of our life, in the evening of our life, we will be judged on love. Full stop. Nothing else. And of course, she's doing no more than kind of summarizing the famous judgment scene later on in the Gospel of Matthew. I was hungry and you fed me. I was in prison and you visited me. As a stranger, you took me in. Love is what it's supposed to be all about. And love in an absolutely unqualified way. And this is where I think the kids missed it. Because it's always possible to erect a circle of friends around oneself and hide within that circle against a world which is alien, not only alien, but offensive often enough. So what we're talking about is what the whole biblical tradition, and Jesus as the summation of the biblical tradition, was talking about. How do we get to love? Is love possible in this world? I mean, love, and here we have to be very careful, because love is one of those wonderful words that just explodes in our head and can mean virtually anything. You know? From one night stands to sacrificial love of a martyr. You know? Love means a radical openness to everybody else. Everybody else. Not just openness to, but acceptance of and care for. You just say that, and that should be the end of it. But it's not the end of it, because our experience in the church, which is supposed to be the home of love, as one student said to me many years ago, a burning furnace of love, simply is not that. And even worse, it doesn't even admit that it's not that. But this is really important, because the question is such love possible in the world? Period. Full stop. Does God exist? To put the question another fashion. Because that's what basically is at stake. Does God exist or not? Does the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Jesus exist? And I don't know whether the kids had the sophistication to even push the question that far. That is, can I love my enemies? Can I pray for those who persecute me? Can I lay down my life for my friends or my enemies? But this is what we're supposed to be celebrating here in this room. You know, this is me for you, the pivotal words in the Mass. This is me for you. And until we are convinced, at least by hope, that that love is possible, the love of the enemy, the unqualified, radically open love to everybody, then we're no place. We're absolutely no place. We're dead in the water. We're lying to ourselves or deceiving ourselves or misrepresenting God to the world. If God exists. But that's the question, does God exist? Do I really believe that I am loved? Before everything else. Before everything else. Because if I don't, we're no place. We're no place. We're absolutely no place. And it's really nice that every once in a while you get this sort of lapidary statement. There are two commandments. Love God, love your neighbor. Finish. Full stop. No qualifications. No. So, this text is important on so many levels. First of all, as a kind of heuristic way of a heuristic of self-examination. You know, what do I really believe? Who am I really? Where do I stand in the world? How do I stand vis-a-vis the world? What am I called to become? And then, of course, where is the church? It's been said over and over again that the only thing that makes the church credible as an institution is that it has produced saints. That's the only reason. Not the Vatican. Not titles, status, costumes, ceremonies, laws. Laws, and we have to be very careful when we talk about laws, because the Hebrew Bible seems to be full of talk about loves. We see it in the passage of this first reading from Exodus. But the Jews understood laws in a quite different way than we do. The law was simply a way of saying, of formulating acts of gratitude to God, whom they believed loved them and liberated them. That's all. You can't command love. You can't command love. And nobody can love for me. So we have the God of Jesus, who calls me to take charge of my own existence. Nobody can love for me. Nobody can be free for me. And the greatest act of freedom, of course, is this self-emptying that will open myself to everybody.